Welcome along to RCR Talk. You are here with Marie, and in this week's counterculture segment, we're pretty much hot off the press. I'm catching up with Simon R. Anderson from Auckland. How are you, Simon? It's been a hot minute since we last caught up. It's good to see you.
And it's wonderful to see you. Thank you again for an invitation. It's always wonderful to appear on your show.
Oh, thank you. And in video now. I mean, stop it. I know that, don't you just love modern technology? And you, of course, have been doing this a lot longer than me with host of Simon TV, as well as your reporting from so many events that have been out and about. And I wanted to get your thoughts on a few things that have happened just recently. And the first thing is, of course, the protests led by Destiny's Church, Man Up and Legacy across the weekend. For someone who covered quite intensely what happened at Albert Park almost 2 years ago, looking at what unfolded over the weekend, what are some of your observations and how the media conducted themselves covering both of these events?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a really great question, and that's probably why you're so wonderful at your job. I'd start by saying, well, you couldn't draw a greater contrast, right, between absolute unrestrained rainbow violence that was universally excused by the establishment and by the mainstream media at Albert Park and at Aotea Square with a really minor event inside a public library last week, from where Destiny Church objected to the grooming of children, which has been portrayed in the mainstream media, is the crime of the century.
Well, stormed is a word that I'm seeing everywhere. They stormed the library. Now, I've seen the raw footage of this, so not just the stuff that's out, the raw footage. There was a little bit of pushing and argy-bargy, some of it not necessarily coming from the team at Destiny. So how can they even compare storming of this library in West Auckland with, you know, absolute rage and violence that you captured while you're in Albert Park? I mean, I'm astounded.
Well, yes, and it is astonishing framing to use a term like that, storming, when you compare it to the framing that they used at Albert Park, which was trans love and joy and an expression of happiness. So that's right. But you've also made another interesting point about how it was very much six of one, half a dozen of the other at that library in Te Atatu. And I would make the point that the Destiny people there are members of the public who are going about their lawful business in a public place. That library is a public place. It is a council-owned facility. Every New Zealand citizen has the right to go there. And what we had was violent rainbow activists, again, trying to prevent the Destiny people from going about their lawful business. I don't see any comment in the extremely biased mainstream media coverage of the fact that it was at least as much wrong on that side as there potentially was on the side of the Destiny aligned people.
One of the things that I find quite interesting about the whole situation is this is nothing new. Destiny's opposition to drag story hours is out in the zeitgeist, it's on the record. People know that the church are heavily against this. And yet, the library, as part of their pride celebrations, and they also, from what I understand, had a dodgeball tournament going on as well, which is quite innocuous. Yes, fine. They know how contentious these rainbow story times are. So my question, and this is, I want to get your thoughts on this, why schedule one to begin with? Two, when you know that this is so contentious and highly likely to bring protests down upon your facility, why are you then doing it? Are you actually, does the library have culpability themselves for putting those parents and children at risk, knowing full well that there is a history from Destiny's Church to protest these sorts of events?
Well,
no one's
I
made
would
comment
argue,
on that.
No, I would argue that the council is culpable for putting children in a dangerous circumstance by exposing them to predators in the first instance. So yes, it is certainly the case, that the grooming of children in this regard is centered around an extremist group called Auckland Pride that has deep connections within the Auckland City Council and the New Zealand Police, and that what they're effectively doing is knowingly using children, putting children into a position where they are being used to achieve the political and social objectives of Pride Auckland and their activist groups in collusion with Auckland City Council and of course the New Zealand Police. So I think that there is a risk with protesting against this that you're kind of playing into their narrative to a little bit. But another point that I would make is that I think it is fair to say that Brian Tamaki is regarded as a fairly contentious individual in New Zealand public life. But on this particular issue, I think it is also fair to say that he very much represents the consensus opinion of the majority of New Zealanders that children should not be exposed to this. Now, while we are always going to be drawing a parallel between the inexcusable rainbow violence and suppression of free speech that happened at Albert Park in Aotea Square with this incident in the library, what I think we should be careful to not lose sight of the fact is that we are dealing with children who are being exposed to a particular type of perversion for a political purpose.
Yeah, indeed. And I know I have looked into, I don't know what books were read on this occasion, but there is actually a reading list for Drag Story Time, and most of those are steeped in queer or gender theory. So, you've got the indoctrination element there as well. In terms of the second haka, which occurred at the beginning of the Pride parade, and it disrupted things for about 10 minutes. Again, there was this word about this intimidation by them performing this haka. Two things. One, when do we have haka that is good and haka that is bad? I haven't quite figured that out yet because only just a few weeks ago at Waitangi, that was a show of strength and mana, and now it's a show of intimidation and influence. And two, having seen the raw footage, the only thing I saw at the Pride parade behind the barricades were a lot of very angry bull dykes, and I would posit to say that those doing the haka could be intimidated by some of them. So there is this double standard again that we're seeing by the media who only a few short weeks ago are portraying this show of mana by those up at Waitangi who are now saying that, oh yes, but if you're part of Tamaki's flock and you are there under the auspices of the church, therefore it is showing intimidation and violence towards those that are there. The double standard just confounds me.
It absolutely does, and but I don't think you're the only one. I think that I see there was a report released today that showed that it was only about 27% of New Zealanders have any faith at all in the reliability of the mainstream media in this country. And some wag I saw commented on social media, yeah, that pretty much precisely aligns with the support for the Labour Party. I think everyone can see through this nonsense. They can see that the media is absolutely biased here. They watched Chloe Swarbrook do soft soap and interviews on mainstream media in the day subsequent to Albert Park, using terms like cringy revisionist history to describe reports of a riot. And the entire media establishment endeavoured to maintain that narrative while 100 million people around the world were watching footage of trans activists and their rainbow allies beating the pulp out of women and the elderly. Now people see the media constructing a similarly artificial narrative around Destiny Church and around the rainbow parade and are seeing absolutely right through it. I'm very, very pleased, I think, that for the majority of New Zealanders, it seems to me the zeitgeist has changed and people are just not accepting the fabrications and the lies that our mainstream media is so keen to push.
Yeah, well, that sort of started the nexus. Well, at that starting point was Albert Park, wasn't it? And so 2 years on, you are witnessing that change in public opinion in that time.
Well, yes, and I see it in the growth of very much of independent media, that that a lot of people are very much turning away from the news and people that you wouldn't expect, like people in my parents' generation who grew up watching the 6 o'clock news and relying upon that morning paper, are cancelling their subscriptions and turning their televisions off and actually going to social media. To get unbiased coverage. And I think one of the advantages of that is that, when you get people like me and other photographers running around who are live streaming events in real time, it is completely unfiltered. And it's just like, look, this is what's on camera. Look at what is going on here and form your own conclusions, which is kind of how media used to operate. And I think the other advantage that I personally benefit from is that it creates space. Their audiences are departing in droves simply because of that bias and that unreliability. And I think it's wonderful to see people like RCR, you guys doing wonderful work actually with some honest and some thoughtful coverage. And people like Chris Lynch and The Platform and Graham Adams and things like that. And I just think it's wonderful that very good people who are honest and are good at their jobs and are providing useful information that people would benefit from are being listened to and being consumed. I think that the mainstream media is being drowned out, and I think that socially that is a very good outcome.
So it's almost like a natural withering process in regards to that trust. I mean, those trust in the media surveys showing it just absolutely tanking. One of the things that I saw just before we came on here, I was just doing a quick scan to see some of the opinion and commentary from the Tāmaki protest, and I couldn't believe it that with the Posy Parker, there was the media were absolved of any wrongdoing for helping whip the counter protest, as they called it, into a frenzy, and particularly using the misinformation that they had around the Nazi protest in Australia leading in. And I'm waiting. I was just waiting for the minute that the reductio ad Hitlerium, the Godwin's Law moment was going to happen, and then just right on cue, Lloyd Burr and stuff dropped it, drawing a conclusion of Tāmaki Destiny's Church man up to the likes of, the brown shirts and the rallying within Nazi Germany. And it's like, wow, is this what we've been reduced to? And also too, is he just gotten to a point, is the likes of Burr and et al. In that space, just gotten to a place where they're just speaking to this echo chamber now. As you said, what was it, 27% also is the same number of the Labour voters. Is legacy media only there now for a certain voter base and not for all people?
Yeah, they are, but they're incapable of changing their habits. And I'll give you two examples. I don't know if you caught it, but I filmed a sardonic piece to camera outside of NZME's head offices on the day that they announced that 38 of their journalists, which I call regime stenographers, had been made redundant. I called it NZME's Learn to Code Day. Now, a huge number of people found that seriously entertaining. It was quite cathartic for the general public watching that video to celebrate the fact that these people who took huge amounts of money from the Ardern regime under the Public Interest Journalism Fund to promulgate falsehoods throughout the COVID period, to refuse to report on things like Three Waters, to refuse to report on things like the Hei Pūapua report, were actually being held to account. Now, the second incident that happened is that there is a chap who is posting on social media who's caused quite a amount of consternation in certain circles over the last 2 weeks, who goes by the nom de plume Matua Kahurangi. Now, he reached out to me And I'm one of very few people who he's actually spoken with. I think there's maybe four or five of us, and I think your Alia is one of the people who has spoken with him.
So just as a bit of context, this is a man who has come out speaking. What I think he this is the chap he posted around having voted for ACT and why, and that he is a Māori who is not down with the current activist Te Pāti Māori et al.
Precisely so.
Yes, right,
Precisely
okay,
so.
yep,
So,
same chap, yep.
yes, that's him. And he's been because he's a Maori individual who is guilty in this, from the perspective of the left-wing media, of wrongthink. They've been trying to cancel him. And one of the big things they've been trying to do is to identify him. And in the meantime, they've been promulgating a narrative that he's AI generated, that he's not actually a Maori person, so on and so forth, right? Which is disproved by everyone who has spoken to the man. Now he's maintaining his anonymity, and I've seen the death threats sent to him, and I think that him maintaining his anonymity is a very, very good idea. But there has been some investigation around that, and I know I'm giving you a very, very long-winded answer, but one of the organizations that very much wanted to identify him was the spin-off, and their journalist contacted me looking for information before writing a hit piece. To be fair to the man, as hit pieces go, it was quite mild, but it was really interesting in his approach that he approached me for information, knowing that the answer was almost certainly going to be no. So my answer to your question is, I think the mainstream media realizes just how deeply unpopular they are and how absolutely over them their audiences are. People don't want to source for them. We're all the paradigm has changed. It is no longer media as producer and public as consumer. What it is the public as producer and consumer, where we now have the tools to be able to share information with one another and to form our own critical judgments about it, and to just leave their antiquated business model and their biases in the past.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that is so powerful. And it's funny you should mention him because one of the things that really got my pecker up last night was reading in the New Zealand Herald how that they had identified a new FM announcer, Bailey Palala, and they were doxing him and attempting to dox another young man who worked at a local South Auckland school. And from what I understand, the image that they used for that young man was fully incorrect. And legal, I then got involved. But I mean, I looked at that, having been on the receiving end of media cancellation and doxing and ch chasing your profession because of personal held opinions. I thought that, wow, that's so 2018. I thought we'd moved past all of this. But is this now symptomatic of a legacy media desperately in decline, and they just we don't know where to go? They can see the hammer falling, and this is what they're attempting to do to get clicks, or at least try and get some relevance.
Well, yeah, I think there's an aspect of that, but I also think that that they're operating like a cornered animal, where the gloves are off, and they will attack anyone and anything that they see as defiant to the narratives that they want to promote and promulgate, and anyone who gets in their way, they know that the broadcasting standards authority will rubber stamp anything that they do, that they can, they're more than happy to dox anyone, as the spin-off wanted to do to this guy. The fact that he was receiving death threats, but the spin-off were trying to identify him anyway, just really says everything, right? Like, the safety of that man and his family did not feature in the equation. Just like for NZME and the Herald, who identified in coverage two of the people that were part of that Destiny protest, one of whom I understand is a child. He's under the age of 18, who was named and has his photograph in the paper. The potential threats to those people, to their livelihoods, and to their families, if they featured in the equation at all before NZME decided to publish, it was only in terms of how much harm NZME could possibly do to them.
Yeah, indeed. I want to segue now across to the report that's just dropped from the Independent Police Conduct Authority around the actions of police at Albert Park. Now, you have been following this from day one.
Well, yes. Yes. I think that'd be fair to say, yes.
Yes. So, initial impressions?
Oh, well, it's a whitewash. It's an absolute establishment whitewash that is designed to ensure that the police corruption is not exposed, and that the political collusion between the Labour Party MPs, the Labour Leader's Office, and the Green Party with senior police is not exposed and not criticised in and by the general public.
The summary, I mean, you posted this just before we spoke. The summary very much worked very hard to blame systemic failures and not failures of individuals. Who are they trying to protect?
Well, if I was to guess, I would say it is personally previous Commissioner Andrew Costa. My personal belief is that the instructions came from his office following discussions between him and the Labour Leader's Office. I don't have any evidence to produce to support this. This is just complete supposition. But after that he gave the instruction to his officers that they were to aid and abet the rainbow violence against women and the elderly in Albert Park, and that is what police did. What I would say to your listeners is this fact. This is one of many facts that was not addressed by the IPCA, and I would like people to stop for a moment and consider why the Independent Police Complaints Authority did not investigate this one particular aspect. Now, Mrs. Keane Mitchell, Posey Parker, is used to threats against her. Her and her people for Let Women Speak have well-developed defensive mechanisms. One of those is that her location is a closely guarded secret. Now, outside of her immediate retinue, no one knew the name of the hotel that she was staying at, and no one knew her room number except her and her closest confidants. For some reason, the New Zealand police, and I believe it may have been Sergeant Donovan, but I do not know that for sure, someone in the New Zealand police demanded to know which hotel she was staying at and which room number, what her room number was. Against their better judgment, Posey Parker's retinue provided that information to the New Zealand police. 4 hours later, a death threat note was slipped under her door inside that hotel room, and she had to shift hotels. The retinue made the very wise choice to not inform the police of the new hotel name. Now, when that death threat was slipped under her door, the only people in the world who knew which room at which hotel she was staying at was the hotel itself, Posey Parker herself, her retinue, and the New Zealand police. Do your listeners think that the IPCA might have wanted, in the 2 years that they have had to investigate what happened at Albert Park, to actually address how it came to be that her location was leaked and a death threat was slipped under her door?
Yeah, but it's not potentially in their interest. And that is just one hole that you have mentioned to me. There are other holes within this investigation that this report does not cover. What are some of the other glaring things that should have been discussed, were discussed in an interview within the inquiry, and yet crickets in the report?
Well, there are many things. Many of the women who were assaulted in Albert Park report that the police officers who refused to accept their reports of violence against them repeated the same sentence. They all repeated, and it was unusual, they all repeated the same sentence, which was, "We are not here to protect you. We are not here to protect you." And they said this independently. And it seemed to be that they had been instructed to say that. It seemed to be that the police had been instructed to take sides, to aid and abet the rainbow violence, and to dismiss any complaints like that. Other things like in the in the Official Information Act responses, there are communications from a particular police officer, a chap by the name of Rona Stace, who is a police officer who presents as a woman, who has some involvement with Auckland Pride. Now, when, in the days and weeks leading up to Albert Park, there were some email communications from Rona Stace that were mentioned inside the OIA responses, either in his capacity as a serving New Zealand police officer or in his capacity as some sort of representative of the Auckland Pride organisation. Now, the content of those emails was completely redacted in every OIA response. This also is something that was not addressed by the report, which of course is relatively convenient. I also would have liked to have seen if there were any discussions between the police commissioner's office and the Labour and Green political parties in the days leading up to it, particularly because what happened was that a bunch of Labour and Green party MPs, the likes of Chloe Swarbrook and from the Green Party and Shannon Halbert and Marima Davidson, announced that they were going to attend. And that is the point when police completely stopped any sort of communication with the Let Women Speak event organisers. It seemed to me that looking at the timeline of it, that there are questions to be asked about, okay, so police head office in Wellington became aware that a bunch of left-wing politicians were going to be joining in the rainbow demonstration, and suddenly the police wanted to have no more communications with the organisers of the actual ticketed event. And I think that is also a question that it would have been reasonable to expect the IPCA investigation to investigate.
Yeah. One of the recommendations they've come out with is that police should lead a development of new legislation that would include not only how organisers should notify authorities of their protest, but how traffic management plans should be handled and how organisers need to tell their participants about any conditions imposed on their protest. The ridiculousness of that statement, just let that sink in for a moment. The IPCA recommend police should lead the development of new legislation which should include not only how organisers should notify authorities of their protest, but how traffic management plans should be handled and how organisers need their participants about any conditions, tell the participants about any conditions imposed in their protest. Now, there are some, particularly very large, that will actually, like, for example, if they're going across the Harbour Bridge, that they will let authorities know. That makes perfect sense. But this then opens the door of what would be considered by those authorities under legislation, what defines acceptable protest and what does not, surely.
You're right, and you are a very wise lady, and you've picked up on that. The broader issue is that, quite aside from the corrupt IPCA conducting this whitewash report, it's actually worse. What they're using it as a charter to crack down on dissent and to outlaw free speech. You can see that this is the absolute objective of it, and it very much aligns with what Paul Goldsmith is trying to do with the Law Commission right now, where it's like, okay, well, you know, we have people like Lucy Rogers counter-demonstrating. We don't like that. The police should be able to, you know, arrest her, and there should be no consequences for that. It's you know, in terms of the social harm of this report, there is certainly a broader issue, and I think it does. It's very much part of a broader discussion that many countries in the West are having right now about basic civil liberties, in particular free speech.
Okay, so just for a moment, let's bust our tinfoil hats out, hey Simon, give them a wee polish, pop them on. Timing. I'm always someone that likes to look at the timing of these things. Now, the timing from Destiny's point of view is that they've had two protests. I fully endorse what they did at the Te Atatū Library. I've been very open about how I feel about drag story time. However, what they did at the Pride Parade was purely for optics only, and I look at it from a very, it's very clever from Tamaki's point of view because they knew that those optics would go around the world. I actually have a different opinion with Pride. I think, look, what grown-ups want to do, and if that's what how they want to spend their money, have at it. Have at it, team. They have now, Tamaki and et al., they now have had millions of views internationally. So that's all gone on. However, we've got the timing of a Broadcasting Standards Authority discussion document with the various recommendations in there. And it just looks like a rehash of the failed free speech and hate speech laws that have been sort of suppressed from a previous few years. So it's like whack-a-mole. It's now popped up with the BSA. You now have this police watchdog calling in this report for more restrictions around protest within a week of that document going out, plus the protest and the media going absolutely feral over all things Destiny Church. Are they trying to construct a case for these restrictions that they've failed to actually get implemented in various occasions over the last 2 or 3 years, do you think?
Oh, well, I certainly do, and what I often comment about on my show is just how absolutely coordinated it is, and you see this same sorts of legislation often even with this with very very similar bill names being passed by governments throughout the Western Hemisphere and particularly within the Anglosphere. You know, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't seem to matter to me if it's Anthony Albanese in Australia or if it's Keir Starmer in Britain or it's Justin Castro in Canada. It's all very, very similar sorts of legislation. And you look at what's happening with Australia's E-Karen, Julie Inman Grant. She's the American lady who is now the chief censor inside Australia. And the contention around the authoritarian approach that there is to free speech is just astonishing. And they make similar arguments. But what I think is, I do believe that it is coordinated, certainly with from left-wing aligned political parties like Labour in the United Kingdom, like National and Labour in New Zealand. But what I also like to see is that there is some pushback from it, and I was very, very encouraged by Vice President Vance's speech to the Munich Security Council a couple of days ago, where he very much made the point to the European Union that their enemy is not Russia. Their enemy is this authoritarian crackdown that they have upon civil liberties, starting with free speech. And that very much resonated with me. And as someone who's spent their entire life very much opposed to American cultural imperialism, in this particular instance, I say bring it on. You know, I very much hope that the United States becomes a champion of civil liberties in that regard. And I like to see what this current administration is doing in that regard. And to just to add to that, I see that they're actually making it a little bit conditional. I see that Trump has actually said to the Australians, look, if you do not enshrine free speech inside your legislation, step back from some of this authoritarian nonsense that you're imposing upon your people, that is going to have trade implications. And I think it is tremendous that we have at least one administration in the world that is waving a big stick and standing up for basic civil liberties.
Yeah, that speech from JD Vance was certainly a very eloquent, gentle telling off, I think, of a lot of European leaders. But also, too, there has been a switch with the mood very much there is changing. And then you follow that up from that speech with two violent attacks in Austria. And, you know, you can see that the mood within the populace is certainly changing. Do you think also here, bringing it back to what's going on in this country, do you think that there's a sense from those who've held control and power, and I'm not necessarily talking about those elected, but those in those unelected positions, we have a lot of unelected officials who hold a tremendous amount of power over New Zealanders' lives. Do you think that they can see the pinch coming from North America, from that change in the culture, and know that their days are numbered, so they're scrambling to get as much done, changed, and entrenched as they can before New Zealanders really start waking up, pushing back, and speaking out?
Well, I do, and is it Deutsche, but I think it's often misattributed to Gramsci about the long march through the institutions, and we do see this. And of course, you know, it's the approach of the authoritarians is always incremental. The idea is you just keep pushing, 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 and okay, sometimes you have to make a little tactical retreat, but eventually you get there in the end. And this is the tactic that the rainbow community is imposing upon our society through things like rainbow grooming time in for children in libraries. And that what the advantage that all of those unelected power brokers do inside the elites, and by this I'm including, you know, activist judges who are ignoring, deliberately ignoring parliamentary's will and legislation to produce their own law, through to the Attorney General. Una Jagos making, you know, just unilaterally without a mandate, trying to impose racial apartheid on prosecution decisions nationwide. The advantage that these people enjoy is that there are never any consequences. You can do that. Someone like this, the Attorney General, can unilaterally do something like that and then just tactically withdraw a bit. Oh, look, you know, what I said was just misinterpreted. I've reissued the advice. But there are no professional consequences. She hasn't lost her job over that. Senior judges who decide that no, we are going to just disregard the will of Parliament representing the will of people, the people in legislation, can continue to do that. And one of the big things that I would like to see change in New Zealand is that there are consequences for malfeasance, for the powerful, for people in public office. An example of that is, you know, like someone like Una Jagos, she should have lost her job straight away. Judges, they cannot be appointed positions anymore. They need to be elected positions. So the judges know they need to be reflecting the will of the people that they are paid to serve.
And that is then coming back to having leaders that are able to lead, isn't it? And yes.
Yes. Well, yes, there is that. Well, you know, I mean, I think everyone knows that Christopher Luxon is gone. He's you know, he's a lame duck prime minister now, and the only question is when, not if, his colleagues, his caucus colleagues roll him. What I expect is that no one in the current National Caucus, or certainly not enough of them, have the backbone to stand up for the Treaty Principles Bill. So what they'll do is they'll let him take the hits for voting against that, and then after that vote goes through, that he will be rolled. But yes, it's certainly in terms of leadership, you know, that Christopher Luxon has left an awful lot to be desired.
Yeah, he's, as Marty, my offsider in Media Matters, often says, he is the David Brent of New Zealand politics, that's for sure. So, look, it's been great to catch up, Simon, and we need to do this more often, you and I. And
We
it has
should.
been, and also to let people know where they can catch up with your content, because you've really increased that now. You've got a lot of content out there that people can engage with. So where can they find it?
Okay, for my usual nonsense, which is my live shows and bits and pieces, I go to simontv.org. For my more thoughtful recorded content with interesting New Zealanders, with fascinating stories to tell, the best place to go is to polity.world. And just on that, I'm looking for other contributors to join me. If you have something to say, if you have an article that you want published and disseminated, hit me up. Polity.world is for my more formal content, and simontv.org is my typical nonsense.
Right. Very entertaining, typical nonsense it is. This has been Simon Anderson here on RCR Talk. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you.